Welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronic supply chain fields. I'm Mike Buto, Editor-in-Chief of PCD&F and Circuits Assembly. Today's podcast is sponsored by PCB Today, bringing two-day workshops on design and manufacturing to your door. Coming in June to Austin, Texas, Design Essentials for PCB Engineers and the SMT Assembly Boot Camp. Visit PCBtoday.com for more information. It's been just over a year since we last had this week's guest on PCB Chat. Sue Mucha is the president of Powell Mucha Consulting, the firm she founded to help EMS companies of all sizes with strategic planning. Prior to that, Sue spent 20 years working in a variety of roles for SCI, Avex, Flextronics, Zetel, Spartan, and Elemax, mostly in sales and marketing at a director or executive level. Welcome back to PCB Chat, Sue.
Thank you, Mike.
The top story in world news today is, of course, COVID-19, better known as the coronavirus. We just published a column to the PCDNF.com and CircuitsAssembly.com websites outlining Sue's strategies for communicating possible or actual supply chain and factory disruptions to suppliers, employees, and customers. Sue, much of China was taken offline for a period of weeks already, and the aftershocks are being felt even while the potential for more calamity remains. Say I'm in charge of fashioning a communications plan for my team. Whom do I speak with, and where would I even start?
We've really got a two-pronged situation here. Challenge with crisis communications is there's always going to be a lot of unknowns as we go forward with it. I think the first thing to look at is getting senior staff, ideally procurement. If there is a head of program management, probably head of program management, production, CEO, and HR all together to sit down and build a situation analysis and discuss worst-case scenarios, then build your communication strategy out of that. And I think one of the key things you've got to look at is that this isn't just Asian supply chain disruption, potentially. If COVID-19 spreads here, and if everything they've said that it's like a very bad flu is true, it probably will spread here, just, you know, not to the level that it may have been in China, because we have a different approach to public health, I think, at a societal level. But I think the bigger issue is you've got to be looking at how are you engaging your employees and motivating certain behaviors with your communication, and also look at your other stakeholders. How are you reassuring and building trust in your customers? How are you making sure the marketplace understands what's going on with your company so that you're not taking any impact to your brand from, you know, people making assumptions? And then whatever other audiences you have, if you're publicly traded stakeholders and or shareholders, and those kinds of things need to be addressed within the communications plan that you build. Because the end goal isn't just to send out a press release or a message. The end goal is to build trust, reassure the people that are associated with your company that you are doing everything you possibly can to keep the outcome, you know, as good as it's going to be, even though you're in a situation where you can't predict what will happen. And I think that's kind of the psychology of this. And to a certain extent, that's exactly what it is. It's about psychology. You're motivating behaviors. You're also, you know, doing damage control before damage gets done.
So you've identified quite a few different stakeholders, which leads me to wonder, who do you recommend should be the face of the company in these situations? Or would this be a multifaceted approach?
Well, there's really three issues here. First, you have to identify audiences. Then you have to determine who is best interacting with those audiences. And finally, you need to make sure that you are defining who doesn't communicate. And I think all three of those things are really important to do. For example, let's look at it from an internal standpoint. Let's say you're an EMS provider with customer-focused teams. Chances are you want your program manager to be the face of the company to the customers he or she is managing. So that's going to be your primary channel of communication. So you educate your program managers with what the messaging needs to be, and you make sure that they have visibility into when that message is changing. But at the same time, you've got a customer-focused team. That means that you've got you may have engineers and buyers and other people on the floor that are interacting with your customers team and having conversations. You want to make sure that those folks aren't inadvertently in a casual conversation saying, oh man, half of our test group was out today. I don't know what that's going to do to our, do to our production. Let the program manager communicate whatever that message is, because the program manager knows what's sitting on the shelf and knows what their contingency plans are for something where, if you are missing production as a result of people being out sick. And again, on the human factor side, motivating healthy employee behavior, an HR director may be the better person to do that. It may be the CEO. I think one of the things to look at in that is to find ways to have fun. Anytime you want to motivate employee behavior, particularly with younger generational employees, if you want to engage them, it's got to be interesting. You can't just give them a lecture on you've got to wash your hands for 30 seconds. You've got to find a way to make them all have engagement into that process. One of the things I saw on GMA this morning was they were talking about the elbow bump instead of handshakes, and the fact that letting people, encouraging people to get creative and how much personal space they could give each other might be one way to get people thinking about healthy habits. So again, this is going to pay dividends for flu season too. I don't know about everybody else, but my flu season in El Paso right now is double what it was last year. So from that standpoint, any behavior that is anti-coronavirus in terms of healthier, washing your hands, staying away from people, that type of thing, is also going to be beneficial for flu. It's all about productivity. And the other message that they need to get, which probably is better a CEO-driven message, would be that they need to amp up customer service in this time. You're going to have more customers calling in. Phones shouldn't be ringing endlessly. People shouldn't be stuck in voicemail. It becomes really important. The analogy that I like to use when I have people visualize customer service is, remember the last time you got stuck at an airline gate in bad weather? Now, that gate agent couldn't control the weather or the plane that was late as a result of it, but that gate agent could control how fast you got on the plane. And if you've been at a gate where you have a gate agency that hustles everybody on a late plane, and they've got a flight crew that is helping everybody get their bags in and really trying to cut down the time that they're sitting there, as a customer, you appreciate the hustle more than, even though your flight's still going to be late, you appreciate the fact that they are at least trying to take some time out of that, more than when you see them all slowly doing their jobs and taking just as long to board the plane as if the plane arrived on time. That's the kind of service element you want to encourage in your employees. And then in your customers, we talked about program management being the lead there. In the market in general, it may be the CEO if you've got a charismatic CEO. It may just be strong, good marketing messages at the right time. But the one thing you really don't want to do is make your name too well known in association with news stories that deal with supply chain disruption. And the reason I say that is because memory plays tricks on people when they're getting a lot of bad news at one time. If you are, for instance, in a news article that says company ABC is doing extremely well when all these other companies are experiencing large amounts of supply chain disruption, people are going to remember that they heard a story about supply chain disruption, and your company was one of them. And I've already had one client of mine come back and say, hey, Wall Street Journal wants to interview us. What do you think? And I was like, don't take that interview, because people aren't going to remember that you were the ones that said it's not bothering us. And the other factor is, in this particular environment, 2 or 3 weeks from now, you could be experiencing supply chain disruption, and then you're going to have a bunch of angry customers that are calling and saying, but you said this was not a problem for you. Because the situation can change, and because people will remember you simply with the word supply chain disruption, I would avoid media at this point, unless you absolutely have to communicate for a shareholder-related issue.
So there's a lot to unpack there. One of the things I'd like to dive down a little bit more into is the optics of your response time. You had mentioned that the airplane analogy and the importance of, you know, hustling and looking like you're hustling. How should a company prioritize responding to the questions that will probably come fast and furious and repeatedly versus all of the other things that they need to do over the course of an average or typical business day? Would they follow the same communications response process that they would with any other typical customer question, or does this all get moved to the top?
I think it needs to get moved to the top to a certain extent. I mean, one of the beauties of today's EMS industry versus the EMS industry we had when we had SARS or murders or things along those lines is that it's a lot more real time. Most program managers have systems at their fingertips that are allowing them to kind of track project status pretty close to real time, often be able to understand where their material shortages are, if not in real time, within a few hours. But the point is that I think is really important is the biggest mistake that I see program managers make is that they don't have an answer for something and they think that the right answer is to wait until they have an answer to get back with the customer. In this particular situation, because customers are afraid of an unknown, every time they turn on the news, they're hearing the word supply chain disruption. They're afraid of an unknown. They've already seen some fallout from what's happened in China. And everything I see says China's starting to come back online fairly well. But they've already seen that happen. And so they're all imagining worst-case scenarios. So even if you don't have an answer, just picking up the phone if they go into voicemail and calling them back and saying, look, I don't have an answer on this yet, but this is what our company is doing to get answers faster, and I will call you back within whatever you think is the reasonable amount of time and give you for the feedback loop that you've established and give you that answer. A lot of this is, like I said, psychology. It's reassurance, making sure they understand that it is as big a problem to you as it is to them. And that goes an awful long way. But, you know, like I said, I mean, I teach a program management class for IPC, and the next one, by the way, is starting mid-April, but it's an online class for them. And, you know, the biggest thing I hear is, well, I don't call a customer because I don't have an answer yet. And it's like, don't do that. Call the customer, tell them you're getting the answer. It matters to them. Or send them an email that says, I'm getting the answer. But if you feel your customer is really scared, take the time to make a phone call. You're building trust. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. I attended a Ritz-Carlton presentation a few years ago. It was a Baldrige presentation, so it was more than a few years ago. But they were talking about the fact that their communications department had done a lot of customer satisfaction studies. And one of the things that they had found is that when a customer has a problem that they are able to successfully resolve, they had a more satisfied customer than a customer who had never had a problem on any of their properties. So the bottom line is, if you have a customer with a problem, and in this case, I think it's going to be when the problem occurs, not if it occurs, you know, the way you are able to resolve it and the speed at which you attempt to resolve it are going to make a big impression in terms of how your customer views you. And the other thing I would recommend is start thinking in terms of contingency messaging. By that, what I mean is, customers like to be in control. When they outsource, they lose a little bit of control. One of the things that is really important when you come in with bad news, and, you know, bad news as in we aren't going to be able to deliver what we told you we were going to be able to deliver last week because things have changed, something along those lines. The best thing you can do is instead of just delivering that bad news, tell them that, but also tell them, and here's the recovery plan, that we can do this option for you, option A, or we can do option B. Which option do you prefer? Because when you do something like that, what you're doing is you've created an out-of-control situation with the bad news, and then with the good news, what you're doing is you're putting your customer back into control because they get to choose how you resolve the problem. So if news is bad, always think about multiple options to present the customer to choose because that puts them back in control.
Sue, does everyone inside and outside the company get the same information and message, or should it be tailored depending on who's the recipient?
it should be tailored based on who's the recipient. And it gets a little bit complicated when a company is publicly traded. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that in this conversation because companies that are publicly traded generally have their own communications department or someone who is managing shareholder communications, and they already know what they need to do there. But other than to say, if you are a publicly traded company, you know, SEC regulations say that you have to disclose material events. Something that is going to significantly impact your financials, like supply chain disruption, is a material event. So you can't have everybody in your company and some of your customers knowing how bad it is and not tell your shareholders. So that's something that your shareholder communications department needs to handle through the disclosure process they have already established. But the bottom line is, in those cases, your messages have to be pretty equal. Right? If you're privately held, then you have the ability to tailor your messages in a more detailed way. You may want to be more candid with some of your larger customers than some of your other customers, particularly if you're having to make choices in terms of who gets what when. And obviously, the employee communications, as I mentioned before, is a whole different set of communications than what you're communicating to customers. What you communicate to the broader market, as I've said before, is just stability. That's a little bit different than the level of detail you may be providing customers. Yeah, to a certain extent, there is going to be tailored messages. And again, recognize that you're going to have changes. Don't go out and brag that you are experiencing zero disruption, because a week from now or 2 weeks from now, it could be different. It could be supply chain related, meaning a key supplier now has, you know, the virus running around there, or it could be something that's hitting your facility, because I think we're going to find that this virus is a lot more widespread in terms of whether it's two-day flu or, you know, whether it's a mild infection in healthy people or not. It's still going to take people down, and in smaller companies, having somebody out for a day or two can be a problem. That's another area you may want to also look at communicating in terms of are there going to be changes to sick leave policy? What is your work at home policy? Those kinds of things. In the communication strategy, you should be thinking, what is it that people won't know that we need to tell them? So I think that's another element that you should be thinking about as you do communication strategy.
What happens if something you've stated turns out to be false, inadvertently or otherwise?
You correct it as quickly as possible. There's a high probability, just given the nature of the way infections run, that what you say today might not be true a week from now or 2 weeks from now, and you just correct it with the people you've said it to. And that's why I say it's important to be conservative in your approach to any broad-based messaging you do outside your company.
Now, Sue, over the course of your illustrious career, you've probably encountered these situations either on a pandemic-type level, as you mentioned, with MERS and SARS, or just on a one-off, you know, an incident where a company that you're working with has had a supply chain disruption for some reason or another. You've probably encountered these situations quite a few times. What part of your business is dedicated to communications and messaging versus some of the other aspects that you bring to the table?
I'll be honest with you, I have encountered it more than a few times. H1N1, company had a factory burn down. I mean, there's been a variety of challenging situations I've had to deal with. But I think the bottom line is I don't divide it into, oh, this is 50% this, 50% that. I am an accredited business communicator through the International Association of Business Communicators. I have dealt with this kind of challenge during my 40-year career, dealt with it in a lot of different flavors. And so from that standpoint, it's normally something that I handle in conjunction with an existing customer when they just have a surprise. It's not something where I go out looking for, okay, let me be your crisis communication manager. It's a skill set you evolve and learn from every time. There are new lessons every time you go through a crisis communication situation.
And if somebody wants to find out a little bit more about Palmucha Consulting, where would they look?
They can look at my website, www.powell-muchaconsulting.com.
Well, thank you, Sue. That brings us to the end of this week's PCB Chat. I'd like to thank our guest, Sue Mucha of Palmucha Consulting. Today's podcast is sponsored by PCB Today, bringing two-day workshops on design and manufacturing to your door. Coming in June to Austin, Texas, Design Essentials for PCB Engineers and the SMT Assembly Boot Camp. Visit PCBtoday.com for more information. This has been Mike Buto. Have a nice day.